Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. So before we get into today's episode, I want to give a special thank you to John G for their continued support of the FKT podcast, but also because beyond making durable trail running apparel, they also donate 2% of sales to clean water programs in all the places we run. John G has donated over $1 million to clean water and counting. Shop their gear at johng.com and use code FKT for 10% off. Today, we're chatting with Jessica Johnson and Cryptic, who set an unsupported FKT on the Toyabe Crest Trail. Join us to learn more about their experiences on this seldom done route in remote Nevada. Jessica and Cryptic, thank you so much for coming on the show today to talk about the Toyabe Crest Trail. I'm really excited to feature this and feature you. I imagine a lot of our listeners are not familiar with the Toyabe Crest, and I've been on a very tiny piece of it, and I know it can be in pretty rough shape. So I would love it if you could describe the Toyabe Crest, what condition it's in, and maybe how you chose this FKT.
For me, it was through Jessica. I started the PCT this year. I did the first 800 miles of it and got off at Kearsarge. I was the first person over Forrester Pass this year. And I stayed with them when I got off trail. And they were chatting about doing this FKT and invited me along. So flash forward a few months and we started chatting about it more and we set a date and we went and did it.
I love that. I love that you're just like, well, so I did 800 miles of the PCT and like, oh, that sounds like fun. I'll go do that with somebody I just met. So this is unrelated to the Toyabe Crest, but you were the first person over Forrester, and we've had Carl and Nick both on the show to talk about their PCT experiences. But I just want to know what your experiences were going over Forrester Pass, the first person in an epic snow year. Like, if you could tell us about that, because I want to know.
It was kind of terrifying, honestly. So I have some mountaineering experience, and I spent a lot of time in the Whites. Last year, I hiked the JMT, and I was the first person to hike the JMT last year. So I had some idea of what I was expecting going into the Sierras. At Kennedy Meadows, there were about 40 of us that were just kind of waiting. I was there for about a week, and eventually just had to go. So me and one other hiker continued forward. One of her shoes broke, like the midsole completely delaminated, not very far in. I think it was like day two we were out. So they decided to head to town. I decided to keep going. We chatted about it. We were close enough to Trail Pass that seemed safe enough. It was a lot of just feeling very isolated and alone. Every now and then I'd see ski tracks and I'd get really excited. And I had a day that was cold and overcast, so the ice was really hard packed and really treacherous. It was difficult to get purchase on it. So it was just slow and a lot of like get to a safe spot and stop and take a breath and recenter myself and keep moving.
Did you have crampons and ice axe?
Yes.
Okay. And that was one of the questions I had, you know, like obviously the two of you hadn't, at least I assume you didn't adventure together prior from meeting in the Sierra to doing the Toyabe Crest a couple months later. How did that go? Like, especially considering like the different backgrounds of hiking and running.
I think my biggest concern going in was I don't think of myself as a runner. I mean, I run regularly. I do probably at least 20 miles a week. But in my head, that's all just, I want to be able to do these other things that I really love doing. So I'm going to do this thing that really connects me with that without having to, you know, drive an hour or two to a trailhead. So I was really worried about just slowing them down. We had really compatible paces. And I think we made a really good team with route finding and with just you know, all the little to-dos at camp and the stops you make along the way.
So when you were out there, did you primarily run, primarily hike? Did you mix the two? Like, how did that actually end up playing out?
I think it was a mixture. We did a lot more hiking on longer uphills. We'd pick up speed on downhills and do our little ultra shuffle when it was flatter.
I was wondering if you could describe a little bit about the planning process for this, because this trail isn't commonly done. It's pretty remote. What was that like? How did you plan for this?
I think the biggest thing I did with planning was I used a lot of the data that Jessica had already accrued on CalTopo to go through and make a list of all the different little turns that the trail took and things that it would do per each mile. Just a little scratch sheet to have. Then they added water sources to that as well. That wasn't something we wound up using really on trail, but I found that the process of doing that and like just having that mental practice at learning the route helped me to find recognition when I was on trail looking for identifiable landmarks.
I was reading your report and I was looking at the maps and things like that. And the first thing I was struck by was that in your report, you talk about a whole bunch of river crossings, which doesn't seem like you would have that on a crest trail. But also just like the routing where it circles around Arc Dome itself, and it seems like it drops into a drainage. So can you talk a little bit about like what the actual like route is like? How much are you up on like a crest and how much are you down in like canyons and things like that?
Yeah, and it's so interesting. You said like you would think that the Toyabe Crest Trail hugged the crest, that it would visit the highest point in the range, Arc Dome, right? And it doesn't. That's something like I find myself often being just inspired by the land of what I want to do next in the land and how to further that relationship. So I think of this as like starting the Toyabe Crest Trail, and then it would be interesting to see also like how, you know, maybe somebody in the future comes up with a Toyabe Crest Traverse, you know, that actually follows all of the highest points along the crest, you know. But then there's interesting things about developing routes like that as well, you know, like the Great Basin National Park Traverse is another route that I did with some other friends last year, and that was really great. And they have another endemic buckwheat up there called Holmgren's buckwheat. That name may change, actually. They're changing a lot of names. Maybe you heard about the birds. They're changing the names of all the birds that are named after people. That's so interesting. So anyway, this buckwheat, the greatest threat to it is recreation. It's just people walking on top of it, you know? And so I think there's a balance too, where we have to understand like, you know, where we love the land. That's why we're there, you know? And so just also considering the impacts of recreation as well.
Absolutely. I love hiking in Nevada, but just desert regions in general, because there is such a vast amount of like flowers and plants and like very tiny, like you said, you could easily miss it, you know, and just like the tenacity of these plants to live in such inhospitable environments. I love it. Cryptic, do you have anything to add to that?
You say it's only about 60% of the trail that's really up. We went southbound. So first day was climb and then stay up for a pretty good chunk of the day. With the exception of one really, really long canyon, which we actually dropped into just as the solar eclipse was starting, where we were kind of worried we weren't going to be able to see it because the sun was being behind the ridge. Yeah, the trail kind of follows ridge lines as it can on more rounded aspects, and then we'll get you up towards what looks like you're going to go up this big technical steep face, and then drops right down out into a canyon to follow water for a little bit. And it kind of makes a pattern of that. You'll go decent chunks of time without water, but then you'll follow it for several miles.
You mentioned that you didn't plan to camp the second night or that you stayed out that extra night.
Did you have the supplies to camp out a second night? Like, were you guys like out of food? Like, how did that end up playing out when you ended up being out there longer than you anticipated?
We had enough food. I brought 2 days of food, but I know I undereat on these things. So it ended up being 2.5 days of food. So it was perfect.
Okay. Because you guys did this as an unsupported effort. And so, like, I know when you're doing unsupported, I mean, you don't want to carry anything extra if you don't have to. So I was wondering how it ended up playing out being out there a little longer than you intended. So you were out there 2 nights. So what's the campability of this trail for others that might want to do it?
Yeah, the campability is somewhat low because wherever there's not trail is usually just sagebrush sea. It's a lot of thick brush. There's just not really anywhere you can just lay down and go to sleep, you know? So that was part of the reason why we stopped on the second night as well, was we were just like up on a clearing on a pass, and like, this is the option where it is available to stop. And had we gone forward, we knew that it could be quite a while, especially as the canyon narrowed, until there just was somewhere to stop again. So if we came up upon an obstacle that we didn't feel comfortable navigating through in the dark, there might not have been an option to stop again. So when it was time to stop, it was just time to stop. So there are certainly some clearings. There are some very obvious places where backpackers do camp. Obviously, you want to try for those. But you can't always just stop and lay down.
I mean, I had my tarp, and Jessica had their bivy, which was enough. It wasn't going to rain. We probably should have gotten more water at that last water source, but we made it work. I would also note about that spot was covered in cow pies, and we didn't have any cattle on trail at the time we were there. But I can imagine that being an issue for people if you're there when the cattle are out grazing.
So you've mentioned, you know, kind of the trail's in better shape now than it used to be, but it is still a pretty rugged trail. Did you guys get lost at any point? Were there any complications with navigation on the route?
Yeah, but really short. Most of the time, you just kind of know where the trail is, and it was totally fine.
Did you have any issues with gear failures or any injuries out there?
I had 2 gear failures. I had a pole break, which wound up being pretty much a non-issue. It broke just on the bottom shaft, and I was able to just extend it out to the same length it was. And on that second night out, in the morning when I was packing up, I rolled over and my pad popped. So both gear failures were not a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to pop your pad when you're heading out to civilization, it's a good time.
Yeah, and for me, both my body and gear worked perfectly.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's a pretty remote area. That's kind of how you want it to go.
Well, we did have a flat tire right at the very beginning of the route. The road we drove down to get to the trailhead was all rutted out and gnarly, and a sharp rock just put a flat tire on my truck. And so we got out at the start, put on our packs. We were ready to start our watches, and we looked down and we were like, oh, we'll deal with that when we're done. And so then we just started running. Ran for 2 days and then came back. And
that's a future us problem.
That's exactly right. Just didn't stress about it. You know, you gotta learn to let go of things that are out of your control in the moment and go forward with where you are. And we were able to fix it on the way out, so it was fine.
That actually brings up an interesting point. This is a point-to-point route. How did you get back to your truck? Because that is a very remote trailhead on the north end.
Yeah, I was very happy that Cryptic decided to come along, because that was one of my major issues when I was first planning to do this route solo. I was like, I'll just pack a mountain bike and then I'll just ride back. And then I'm like, no, that's not going to, you know, it's far. So thankfully, Cryptic had also brought a rental car. So we had 1 car at the south and then drove back up to my truck at the north.
Do you guys have any advice for somebody else that might want to take this on, whether as an FKT or just to go experience the beauty of the Toyabe Range?
I would say just don't be intimidated. You know, it's so easy to read a trip report and hear that it's going to be hard, you know, but people who are going out to enjoy a place like this, you understand that you're strong and that you are able to just come up against whatever you come up against. You know, you understand water limitations or just how your own body works in relationship with the land, and that sometimes you just got to show up and see what happens, and it's actually totally fine. You know, don't overthink it. It's fine. Just go give it a shot if you think you can, and you probably can.
I feel the same. Definitely appreciate the land because it's beautiful, and it's just a really special place to be able to be. Also, I think the direction that we chose to do the trail in is, at least psychologically, seems easier to me because the north side of the trail is so much easier to travel on. That kind of gave us a lot of gave me a lot of confidence, at least, as we pushed through into more technical terrain at the end. And then having the car just waiting there as we were scrambling over rocks and crossing over rivers, which to me is just a lot of fun, but also just having that reward rating there made that a lot easier.
Well, thank you both so much for coming on the show today to share about this route and your experience out there. I really appreciate it.
Totally.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again, Jessica and Cryptic, for coming on the show. You can read about their FKT on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and follow their adventures on Instagram. Jessica can be found at Glitter Gravel, and Cryptic at Cryptic Firecat.